now tuned in to the Commissioner's Conversation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. You are listening to the Commissioner's Conversation, and I am your host, Commissioner Gordon. Joining me this week, we got the man, the myth, the legend, great friend of the show. I love chopping it up with him. I learn something new every time. Sam Crenshaw, how are you doing today, brother?
Doing great, Commish. Happy New Year's. First time I've seen you for the new year and greeted you. And always great to spend some time with you. I mean, I've already got it set. Already got it set for July 4th. We're back down in front with everybody running in front of us. I mean, that was so much fun. That was so much fun, 4th of July. Oh, Peachtree Road Race was back full of effect. And you were right there with me, man. We're watching the people come down Peachtree. That was a lot of fun. We had people like Kyle Corver walking past us. Who've been running in the race and whatnot. So it was great to see that back, man. And for us to be down there, since we can't see it from upstairs anymore. They put that building up there to block the window, right? So we can't see it from upstairs. So I'm so glad they brought us down so we can see Peachtree Road Race. And glad you were there in the mix with us.
Yeah, we definitely had a great time. It's always good chopping it up with you and Greg. Also, letting them know you can listen to Sam Crenshaw in the mornings. It's on Sunday morning, right?
We're on Saturday and Sunday now. They put us, and now that football is winding down, we're going to get full shows, full Saturday and Sundays. Most Saturdays, I think we're going to be from 8 to noon and Sundays from 6 to 10. So be sure and check us out going forward. You know, everything, basketball, the Hawks, Braves about to get things going, Atlanta United and so much more. Just check us out there on weekend mornings.
Definitely on 92.9 The Game. And then they can follow you on Twitter and everything social.
Everything social. At Sam Crenshaw 23 on Twitter. And Sam Crenshaw on IG and on Facebook. I'm all in places. So you try to track me down. I'm in one or the other.
So I want to kind of jump into it because it's been an ongoing process. We talked a little earlier, some time ago, when Deion first got the job about expectations and what he should expect from Jackson State and what they should expect from him. And Deion did a fairly good job of bringing Jackson State, in my opinion, to prominence. He shined a light on him. He got things done. If he didn't like the way things were being handled, he would touch on it, but he's Deion, so he knows how to go about and politically move things around, whether it's call a friend to raise some money or call a sponsor to raise some money and get some things taken care of. And many were upset when Deion Sanders, Coach Prime, left Jackson State and took the job at Colorado. How did that make you feel? Did you think that Deion had fulfilled his prophecy of and had done all that he could do at Jackson State, or did he kind of leave him high and dry?
I don't think he left him high and dry. I mean, the profile stays. It's what they do with it. Now he's put them there and established them, and in the people's minds, they are what Grambling was to another era. Jackson State is now. So that he did do. Didn't win the Celebration Bowl. He lost that twice. And he took away something that I wanted to see, and that was Travis Hunter. To have the number one high school recruit say yes to an HBCU, I was looking forward to turning on Sunday Night Football and hearing whatever team he ended up playing for saying, Travis Hunter, Jackson State University. That's what I want to see, and that's been taken away. And to me, that's the axe I have to grind with as far as that goes. I wanted to see that player. I wanted to see him come through there, play them 3 years down there, and get drafted into the National Football League, because that's something that's not supposed to happen. So that didn't happen. He's out in Colorado with him now. So as a number of the players that were with him at Jackson State have. But I felt like what he did was great. He handled things with a great deal of diplomacy. After the fact, you're hearing a lot of people say about some money that didn't go the way it was supposed to go or some things like that. And he's not even talking about that. You know, he's moved on to where he is. And that's his right. You know, some people feels like he owes them something. And I feel like he owes HBCUs. And he did repay HBCUs in a way, because I recall, I remind people, his degree is from an HBCU. His degree is from Talladega College.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, didn't realize that or didn't know that. And I'm surprised the number of people who didn't know that a head football coach at HBCU had to have a degree. He's a teacher. Right. It's an education environment, right?
What do you
mean?
That?
What do you mean? You know, so I'm amazed by the people who comes to, is that a request? Is that mandatory? Yes, it is mandatory to be a coach. Even to be an assistant. What's the lowest level college coach? A GA, graduate assistant.
Yep.
They don't just give you that title, have your paper. So I maybe that's a little bit of education even going into that. But I think what he's left Jackson State with is a reputation of winning now. Can they maintain that? And I'm hearing about this, what, $250,000 lawsuit over broadcast rights right now against the SWAC, going after Dr. McClellan, saying that, you know, he got in the way of some things happening. Let me say this. The SWAC of all conferences at that level, which is the FCS level, mm-hmm. which is the same as the Big South Conference,
right.
same as Ohio Valley, same as the MEAC, same as the Colonial. All the conferences that I've mentioned to you have changed their configuration in the last 3 or 4 years. The SWAC has not. The SWAC has held. They've had no defectors. They've added Florida A&M and Bethune-Cookman, but nobody has left the SWAC. And that, I think that's so much power there. And they realized that with financially through some broadcast rights and some, you know, some sponsors that came their way in the last couple of years.
Right.
Yes, having a celebrity, people talk about these celebrity coaches, having someone as known as a coach was beneficial in that way. And it made people look. But the thing that made people come back was the fact that they were winning.
Right.
People would tune in to see Deion. Okay, Deion Sanders on sideline. Let's see what he does. Okay, all right. And people may tune in to watch that once or twice. But the thing that kept people coming back was that they were winning and that they were playing good football and that they had a different caliber of player on that team. What would the other schools do to lift the level of the type of player that you're recruiting and maintain this? That's the challenge for all HBCUs now. The spotlight is on you. Money has been invested, and you know that if you go out and you put a consistent product on the field and you win, folks like winners. People will invest in you. Sponsors will invest. Companies will partner with you if you continue to put a winning and successful product on the field.
And I think that came to light a little bit with Deion, because people have been concerned about maybe a lot of the HBCUs out of just figuring they didn't have a shot, didn't go after those big time athletes. And so they didn't have that team that Deion put together. But even when Deion put it together, like I think where he's lacking as a coach was he focused a lot of on the outside. Your receivers, your cornerbacks, your running backs, he brought his son in to play quarterback. And it's going to be easy to get those guys, even over at Colorado. You see now what he's doing. It's going to be easy to get those guys. But you mentioned that he lost the Celebration Bowl twice. And I think personally, just watching the games, that he lost it in the trenches. Because both South Carolina State and North Carolina A&T came out and they were running and they were pounding the football. And by the end of the game, they had just worn Jackson State's lines down. To the point where they played smash mouth football. He was playing a little flash type football. And then you see who won in the end. And I think that's going to carry over to Colorado. I don't know what success looks like for Coach Sanders at Colorado, but mm-hmm. I think he's going to be more successful than they've been in the years past. Like, what do you think that he could do? So what is success? Is it a bowl game at Colorado? Is it just winning more than 3 games at Colorado? What is it going to be?
You know, that's a good question, because I can't tell you the last time I watched a Colorado football game. And I watched a lot of college football, but I mean, that's how long since they've been relevant. in a conference that we kind of ignore. First of all, in this part of the country, they don't come on till 10 o'clock at night with most of their games. So you know, we don't see that conference. The first thing he's going to do for them is going to get them better time slots. They're going to be on some, they're going to get some primetime games. Now, what they show people when they show, I don't know. And that may be the difference. There's people, when people tuned in, and remember the big thing at Jackson State and the HBCUs when he came was COVID. They were the only live sports on other than Korean baseball at 4:30 in the morning. There was nothing else. That nation and HBCUs played on Sundays, and that was the only live sports there was for a time. This was before the bubble and the NBA got going. That spring, you had those football games, and people got a chance to sample HBCU football and see that it could be good, to see that there were good players. And then you throw in Deion Sanders. Okay, well, that you know, that's what made that happen. This is different. The Pac-12 is an established league with a lot of superior athletes. And, you know, he's going to go up against some teams in Oregon, in Southern Cal, and UCLA until they leave. Utah is the big, you know, is doing things out that way. I don't know who they're going to go out and push around. And once again, it comes down to linemen. And that's what makes the SEC and the Big Ten what they are. You mentioned the trenches. You know, these are the conferences that have those linemen that can work in. He's going to need that out there. And will he have it? That's the question. I don't know what kind of lineman he's going to be able to get together. And even if he gets them individually, how long will it take them to be a collective unit to go out and see? So you can put some big bodies out there. You can put five big bodies out there.
Right.
But can they deliver consistently? You know, that's the difficult thing. So that's the thing we want to see. Can his son perform at that level? He's going to get a shot. But if he's not winning, is he going to come stand next to dad? There's a whole lot of stuff going on with this. And I'm sure they already got the rights. They've already told the people they want to bring the cameras in and do reality shows and all that. Karen, all that's nice. you got to win some games. That's what made all that go over at Jackson State, is that you're winning. You know, so we'll see what happens out that way. I me personally, even if that's what he wanted to do, to me, another year or two at Jackson State would have got him to the point where he could have gotten a better position at a school that's more in the middle of the pack toward the top. Because my question I always ask is, who did he beat? Who did he beat?
Right.
You know, that's amazing that he got a chance to be, and that's rare. I like to tell people, it's kind of like Richard Williams teaching his daughters to play tennis out in the park or something, you know, and they end up being world beaters. Don't try this at home. don't try this at home, because, you know, not everybody's going to get a chance to go to an HBCU, coach for 2 years, and then get a D1 job. I remind everybody, there's only been four coaches to leave HBCUs and get Division I coaching jobs. We had two of them in 1 week. We had Coach Gardenia from down in Albany State go to Charleston Southern, you know, and then you had Coach Pram go out to Colorado. You know, the other two was a coach from Alcorn when they played in the first Celebration Bowl, got the head coaching job at Southern Miss. And then a long time ago, Willie Jeffries left South Carolina State to go to Wichita State. There have only been four. Only been four head coaches from HBCUs to get D1 coaching jobs. Only four. You know, the idea is these coaches ain't good. They're inferior. They can come as a running backs coach. They can come as a defensive backs coach, but not the head coach. And so I remind people of that when we see that. You saw a little bit of history. There have only been four.
And even with that being said,
and only two of them, and only two of them were black.
That's very noted. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Only four head coaches from HBCUs have gotten D1 coaching jobs. Only two of them have been black.
So, all right. With Coach Prime, personally, I would have liked to have seen him, like you said a little earlier, I would have liked him to come in and had someone get drafted, whether it was Travis Hunter or any other player, and see that all the way, that process all the way through. And then, like you just said, who did he beat? Win the Celebration Bowl.
Bowl.
And like you mentioned, that probably gets you a little better job, because I personally feel like that he took the worst possible job that he could take just to take a job. And I understood, like, had it been Auburn, I would have understood. You know, Auburn went out and got, I think, with Hugh Freeze back over in Lipman.
Yeah.
They went and got, so they made a questionable hire. But had they picked Coach Prime, I would have understood. No questions asked. No one could have denied that. But a team that's won 3 games in 2 seasons, I don't know.
That really would have been for an HBCU to hire a head coach for an SEC school. I when people told me that, I said, that ain't happening. I just say that because I mean, we had history last year. I think he is the first head coach from an HBCU to get a head coaching job at an SEC school, and that's the track coach from North Carolina A&T.
Okay.
You got to remember the most decorated HBCU athletic program in the last 2 years has been North Carolina A&T track.
Right.
To be ranked number 1 in the country. And Tennessee gave him the head coaching job at Tennessee. So I can't remember another time a coach from an HBCU got a head coaching job in the Southeastern Conference. I do believe he's the very first one. So, I mean, I didn't see that happening for the reasons of what's going on in the past. South Florida, maybe. But I just didn't see an SEC school giving him an opportunity coming from an HBCU, other than the fact that they're afraid of him. And that's a whole nother conversation. We get in that whole nother day. I'm a conspiracy theorist because Colorado ain't got this kind of cash. And I'm wondering where they're getting the money from. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if a couple of boosters from Ole Miss, a couple from Mississippi State, a couple from Alabama and Georgia threw $3 or $4 million in the pot and say, get him out of this part of the country.
And they mentioned that.
Absolutely. And absolutely. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? They admit they didn't have cash. So where's the cash coming from? They get some cash from out this way to make sure he's as far away from around here as possible. I wouldn't doubt it. Now, I got nothing to prove that, but I wouldn't put it past him. You know, that's just I'm a conspiracy theorist when it comes to stuff like that.
Hey,
you know,
that's a good perspective on it also because, you know, I don't think he looked at himself as an interrupter. But
Yes, he did. Oh, very much. Very much. Very much. It makes some people uncomfortable. I think that's good.
Right.
You know, schools in this part of the country, the major schools have been very comfortable with the fact that if they sit down in the kids' room, that kid doesn't have a choice. And Deion Sanders said, you do have a choice. And this very much comes on the heels of Black Lives Matter, George Floyd, and all that factors into it. All that's what made the timing right. It still makes the timing right.
Right.
You know, so that's the thing going forward. The timing is still right for HBCUs to come after this time as a place for young Black males to go and get that extra nurturing but not be penalized by going there and not be looked at as being candidates worthy to play the game at the next level. And I'm very curious to see how this fall carries out.
And speaking of this fall, as we roll into it, following the Jackson State's model, or so they thought, following Jackson State's model, Bethune-Cookman University goes out and they hire Ed Reed because why not? You know, it's working out for Jackson State. It seems to be going pretty well at Tennessee State. You got Hugh Jackson down in Grambling. You got you're getting credible guys to come in to say, look, we can do this on a pro and teach you at a pro level. And they bring Ed Reed in, and it all just seemed to go wrong. Well, like, I don't – for Ed Reed to come in, and I listened to the Roland Martin interview with the interim president where he basically tried to – he says he let him know that, hey, this isn't University of Miami. This isn't the NFL. This isn't going to be your NFL locker room. I don't know, like, what – in your mind, what do you think Ed Reed was expecting when he showed up on campus? Did he expect this Oregon LSU style locker room, or should his expectations have been tempered?
I think everybody's expectations should have been tempered. And I questioned the vetting process on the part of Bethune-Cookman. Ironically, when all this went down last weekend, the basketball team, athletic director, and basketball coach Reggie Theus was out of town. He's down in Jackson State taking a loss. But what happened is a loss for both. it's a loss for Ed Reed of an opportunity to show what he could do and to make a difference. Because when he says so passionately he cares about those kids, I believe him. But also it's a missed opportunity for Bethune-Cookman. They've had pro football. The guys who played pro football be coached that before. Alvin Wyatt coached them years ago. Larry Little, the Hall of Famer from the Dolphins back in the day, has coached Bethune-Cookman for many years. They've had NFL players of note to be coaches down there in the past. But Ed Reed is most recent, and he's a product of University of Miami, and he spent some time around the Miami program, had a role, played a role with them. But to me, he had to know a little bit about what was there or what wasn't there. And you know, you're not in the NFL. You're not representing Miami. You are representing an HBCU, and if people want to be presented a certain way, I think some people should have made that very clear to him. And by the way, you said hired. He was verbally agreed.
Verbally, right.
Commitment. There was a verbal commitment. You know, there wasn't anything signed, any signed documents or anything that I don't believe that he had received as of yet. And there was no press conference, because I know I reached out to their sports information guy to try to get him on the radio. I said, hey, can we get him on the radio up here in Lessons? Well, no, we haven't done that yet. We want to wait until after he has his press conference. I said, bet. We got your name on the list. We reach back out to you. And I said, thank you. So, I mean, I reached down to try to see, you know, almost days after it became known that he was going to take the job. And we had heard about who might be next. We've heard names like Ed Reed and Ray Lewis tossed around as guys who possibly could come in and coach at an HBCU and have some of the same vibrato and same charisma, if you will, of Deion Sanders, neither with the cachet of a Deion Sanders.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. Deion Sanders is one of a kind. So, I mean, to me, you can't go and duplicate what he did. You can extract some of the things that he was able to do and put them into what you're doing and use it that way. But there's only one Deion Sanders. And for people to think we're going to find another one, that's, you know, they're sadly mistaken. But here's someone who had a profile and had a certain type of swagger. Did you feel like you got a football program? Okay. You know what this guy's accomplished on the field. You know the attitude for it. You like what he's saying. He's a little rough around the edges. Can we say, look, you know, because here's the thing. He's doing what Deion did. He's on social media.
Right.
You know, he goes on. And that's the thing I think more schools have to embrace. Now, everybody's coach don't have that kind of personality. But that's where people are that want to know about your program. That's where the recruits are.
Yes,
you want to. They will, and you want to meet them where they are. You got to be on social media. In other words, to not do social media is wrong. There are different ways to do it, a right way and a wrong way to do it. So Ed Reed was doing that. He's on it. And he's on there talking about some things that are not there. And Prime did the same thing at Jackson State. He talked about things that weren't there. But he did it in a more positive, uplifting way. Well, now this is not here, but we're going to have to get this done. This is not here. We're going to have that done. And people heard him, and people reached for their wallets.
Right.
He wasn't using profanity and putting the place down in a way, you know. And so that's the other part we would read. I think, it's a lesson learned for all, you know. And it's unfortunate because I wanted to see him. I wanted to see him coach the team. I wanted to see if he could keep a degree of the talent in Florida, in state, and get them to come there. Because people wonder why Miami can't be the U again. Miami can't be the U because you got too many D1 programs in that state now.
Right.
You know, back in the day of the U, that was just them, you know, Miami, Florida State.
And Florida.
Bethune-Cookman, Florida A&M. I mean, there was no Florida Atlantic. There was no Florida International. There was South Florida, you know, and Central Florida was a D2 school, I think. So, I mean, that's you got all those D1 programs out of that. That's why the U can't be the U anymore. And the fence that they had up around Dade County got torn down a long time ago. Everybody goes into Dade County recruits. So, you know, that's why they have such a hard time getting it back. Florida State made some moves in the proper direction this past season. They right. kind of bounced back. But that under that kind of climate, there's room for Bethune-Cookman to be successful. And I'm sure the people said, we got these superstar coaches down. We got Reggie Theus coaching basketball. We're going to have Ed Reed coaching football. I'm sure they're seeing all kinds of possibilities. And now comes the very tough thing. The second signing day is coming up next week. Mm-hmm. Of the players who committed to come there to play for Reed, who will stay, who will go, and who are you going to get to be your head coach? You've gone through two signing periods without having a coach under contract. The stage is set for a disastrous season in the fall. I don't say you can have any type of success. And you're in a conference that's coming up, and everybody's getting stronger. Everybody's is recruiting a different caliber ball player. So it's not looking good.
And you mentioned the head basketball coach, Reggie Theus, who is also the athletic director. I always joke about this, but it's very true that it's tough to do both jobs. Like, it's not high school where you can just have the football coach be the athletic director or the basketball coach be the athletic director. Those are two very separate jobs and two very stressful jobs on top of that. Like, I don't know how BCU is handling having Reggie Theus do one job and how, because he doesn't seem to be putting out any fires around this situation as an athletic
coach. Money. You know what I mean? Instead of having two salaries, you have one salary and have two people wear two hats. And I don't know how long they wanted to have it that way, but that's probably one of the ways they got Reggie Theus to come and take that job. You see, you know, okay, we don't have the money to pay you when you were coaching out at Nevada, whatever it was, Cal Northridge, whatever schools he was coaching at before, because he does have a background in coaching collegiately. And they said, okay, we athletic director too. And they throw some extra cash in. And he's got a little cachet in the area. He played in Orlando in the early days with Orlando Magic. So, I mean, some people in that area kind of know him. So he's not a complete stranger to that area. So I get it. I see it. You know, it may take him a while to get the kind of talent for that program to be competitive, as they're not doing well this season, talking about basketball now. But it's a program with a lot of needs. You know, Ed Reed revealed that they need facilities, which all HBCUs are lacking in facilities. As much as going into Jackson State, there's still some things that they need. They need a stadium. You know, Bethune-Cookman needs a stadium. Tennessee State needs one, too. It's odd that the schools that got these coaches that are notarized, they got some basic needs. They need an on-campus. I mean, Jackson State, that school, that stadium, I think it's property of the state of Mississippi. And they want that property. They want that property. I mean, they want to do something else with that property. So Jackson State needs it on campus. And they got a drawing and diagram or whatever. Who knows when they're going to put it together. And Bethune-Cookman is playing in a municipal stadium. It's not on their campus. You know, that's money you paying to have a place to play. You have your own place to play.
Right.
Jackson State has one. But to tell you the status of it, the people nickname it the hole. And be mad at me, Tennessee State alums, but that's that they need a stadium, because when they have a big game against a big time opponent, they play them at Vanderbilt or they play them over the Titan Stadium. So, I mean, all three of them places need on campus stadiums. There's need for cash, which brings me to the foolishness of people saying, well, why are you going to play games like Celebration Bowl when you go to the playoff? Because playoff ain't got no money for you. And if you don't have a team that's ready to win the playoffs, what you going for? And you don't have a team that's ready to win the playoffs, you know. But as what I was hoping for Jackson State, put one of them teams on your schedule. You want to play Montana State? Put them on the schedule. You want to play North Dakota State? I'm not going up to their place. We're going to meet somewhere in the middle. We're going to meet in Kansas City or St. Louis or somewhere, get some underwriters so we both rip some checks to go in there and play that game. But play that game, because they're curious too. They're at the top end of this of FCS. They're curious about how really good a Jackson State is. They rolled to be, what, number five in the country last year. I think those schools are very curious about just how good that team was. Now, losing in North Carolina Central kind of brings that down a notch. But Central played against a playoff team last year. They scared, I think, New Hampshire. I think they scheduled a game with. So, I mean, put them on your schedule. That'll tell you if your program's ready for the playoffs or not. I mean, Howard gets run off the field by Harvard. Really? You're run off the field by some Ivy League dudes, man. They ain't trying to go to the league. They're trying to work on Wall Street and be the next president. They ain't trying to play no pro ball. So I'm just saying, know what your program's like and put one of them schools on your schedule. And I think it would silence a whole lot of people talking about, what about playoffs? put them on your schedule, and that'll tell you if you're ready, if you're ready for playoffs.
But with the Celebration Bowl, as with everything, a lot of the stuff you just said just comes down to the dollar. And it comes down to the dollar. And what's come into question a lot with, and people have lumped all HBCUs in together, which is wrong.
It's wrong.
In very separate incidents, the money and how the money is being allocated has come up into question a few times. I remember one when Doug Williams was at Grambling, I think one of the big issues with him was the fact that he had raised so much money, and then the school president came in and told him that it had to be allocated towards, like, football got the last piece of the pie, pretty much. Like, they had to bring it through the school, and they had to regulate how the money was going to be handled. And then with the football got to change, basically.
Is that,
in your opinion, a widespread issue that needs to be addressed by different HBCUs, or is it just
I think that's
private institutions?
That's at a lot of schools, not just HBCUs. As the saying goes, you know, athletics is the front porch of your school. That's the thing that people are going to see if they don't see anything. As the old saying goes, athletics is the front porch of any college or higher institution. People will go to a game. They will never set foot in a classroom. They'll never set foot in the administration building. They won't set foot in the student union, but they will come to the gym or the stadium for a game. And so that's a money making. We've seen that happen at some schools. Morris Brown here locally years ago, they were playing a lot of basketball games, and the funds were really going to try to keep the lights on in the school. You know, and that's bad. I mean, their basketball team one season, the story was in Sports Illustrated about how they were scheduling the games to all these Big Ten schools, SEC schools, losing games but bringing checks back, just like I said, to try to keep the lights on over there. You know, just better management skills and better allocation of those funds they have to be in order to maintain success. And, you know, I think everybody has to, like, raise their game, so to speak. And that's the different thing about this time with HBCUs. You're getting all this attention that we wanted. You're getting media attention. You're getting time on TV. You're getting people fighting now over broadcast rights for your games. That's a good thing. But it's something we're not used to having. And so we got to act, you know, sometimes they say you got to act like you've been there before. You got to act like you've been here before. you got to, you know, act like, well, this is supposed to happen. No, it hadn't happened for years, but it's happening now. So act like it and come up with a way to do what, you know, give you something needs to go for something pertinent on the school campuses. But don't leave out your athletic department. Your athletic department needs, in order to maintain this and to attract it. Look at what's happening in Georgia. I mean, all the money they got over there, they get more money because in order to stay where they are, it costs money.
Definitely.
They spend an awful lot of that's the reason why it's only four or five schools that can win the D1 national championship, because the only four or five of them got spending that kind of money. As nice as the facilities are, you got to constantly upgrade. You got to constantly get something new. Your people who are in place, and people, that's the thing that people don't see or don't think about. Your nutritionists, your therapists, your you know, people who, even your tutors.
Right.
Other schools want them folk, you know, because they've been a part of your successful program. Do you want to maintain? Then you got to pay them, you know, to keep them there. It does cost money. And so as HBCUs seek to be better, seek to be a higher profile, seek to attract a different athlete, those are things that you got to be cognizant of, because you do the same old thing. You're going to get the same old players. You get the same old result. And I mean, I'm not saying not recruit any of those guys, because HBCU's a land of opportunity. They've always been a land of opportunity. But if you want it to be better and continue to go upward, you got to do some things differently. You know, you have to do that.
Well, I think this whole process, whether the success of Dion or the failure of Ed Reed, I think it's caused a lot of institutions to look at themselves internally and figure out how they want to earmark all sports in terms of the hiring process, the level of student and talent level that you're recruiting. And I had a friend of mine who he the head, well, he's the offensive coordinator for high school locally here, Langston Hughes. And they, you know, they just won the state championship, and he was a offensive coordinator at Creekside when they won the state championship. And we were talking to, we were just talking about, I asked him, I said, when are you going to, you know, step up or just get the head coach? And he said he thought about going up. He said he had gotten, he had been in talks with Morehouse about a coaching position there, but he expressed how difficult it would be to recruit when the kid still has to pay. You still have to find money to actually cover the scholarship for the kid, because there really isn't a full athletic scholarship. You still have to search and find money. You have to look for a certain talent level of kid to see, can we put you some academic money over here, yep, and cover the whole thing. And mm-hmm. he didn't know if he was ready to go through that situation. So he didn't know if he was ready to take the job. And I told him it was something to think about. But that is something that a lot of people, average Joe fan, when you're looking, say, well, why don't they just go out and just grab all this talent? Well, you don't understand the inner workings of a lot of how this recruiting is. Because like you said, it's not Georgia. It's not Alabama or LSU. And there's just not, you know, coach doesn't walk out and fall on a pile of money. It's different at each individual location. So, yeah, I think it's through all of this, I believe it's raised a level of awareness for individuals that are casuals, as a lot of people would say. It's raised a level of awareness for casual people who just say, okay, well, I've heard of HBCUs, this Grambling, or I heard of such and such, and I know about HBCUs, but I don't really know. But now a lot of people are starting to really dig into it, really put eyes on it. And like you said, this is the time to strike right now, whether it's gaining more sponsorship, whether it's gaining, acquiring more talent to play. But this is the time to strike right now where you say, okay, this is who we are, what we are, and let's rise to the level and get more money for our facilities as well as for our students.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like I said, the time is here now. You got to strike for those things. And a lot of people, they want it to be quick. They want to be something that happens quickly. And, you know, Kamish, what we're looking at is 50 years in the making. 50 years in the making. There's two generations. There's two generations who felt like HBCUs can't. There's two generations of that. We can't because of this. We can't because of that. You know, we can't recruit this kind of player. We can't. And the expectations have gotten so low. You know, and that's, we're trying to raise the level of the expectations, first of all, of what can be. And so that's the tough, challenging part, is to, you know, rearrange some mindsets and some level of expectation. The people who sit out in the parking lot all day, and I love to rail on these folks, it coming while the game's going on, they don't even know. They don't even know why they're there. They say, well, this is just what we do. It ain't what I did. I grew up HBCU games when I was a kid, you know. And in Birmingham, Alabama, as a child, we didn't want to sit out in the parking lot. There's a guy named John Stallworth that was inside Legion Field playing for Alabama A&M on his way to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers and now in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We heard that the NFL scouts were coming to see this guy play. Nobody dared sit in the parking lot. We wanted to get inside and see this dude.
Right.
He was going places. But you got to get more of that caliber player. You know, it's almost like what came first, the chicken or the egg. You got to get that caliber player, right, to bring the people in, and you hope the people will come in from the parking lot, because we've been conditioned to being in the parking lot for all these years. You know, coming in just before halftime to watch the band, and then maybe drift back out to the parking lot some more. The thing that I impressed so much from being at the Celebration Bowl was that the stands were packed for the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even after halftime, because the game was so good.
Right.
You know, well-played football. People respect well-played football. They do. You know, and you're not going to get that from the top. Hey, we saw the top shelf in the Celebration Bowl. And you get down the bottom and you get Mississippi Valley against Delaware State, I don't know what you're going to get. But the same thing with the SEC.
Right.
I mean, if I gave you tickets to see Vanderbilt in Missouri, you going to use them?
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
You know what I mean? And that's the bottom half of the league. But the top half of the league, yeah, no doubt you're going to see that. So, I mean, that's you know, that's the thing that you're trying to get that better athlete to come in. It'll make people look at it better and hopefully be better fans. Hopefully we'll be season ticket holders. Hopefully it will stop being so walk-up. It's very walk-up. Oh, it looked like it might rain today. I guess I won't go, you know.
Right.
You know what I mean? So we got to get our folks to be better fans, but we also got to get better talent, because if you think about the high school programs in this area, there's certain kids that play in front of packed stands every Friday night. They ain't coming to a school to play in empty seats, play in front of empty seats. Exactly. You know what I mean? And so that's something we got to look on the inside. The fans, the people who say they love HBCUs, got to be better fans too. And yeah, that's a whole nother challenge, you know. And we say we love it, and we love saying, "I'm so glad." Okay, wonderful, wonderful. But and everybody's saying that. But you know, that's the other part of it. Are you willing to be a better fan to see your program be better? Because that's what the challenge is now, and that's what the lights are going to come on this fall when the camera lights come on from ESPN Plus or ESPN 2 or the Byron Allen, you know this thing with HBCU go.
Right,
they're going to look at the stands and see if the people are still there. They're going to look on the field and see if the caliber of play is still improving. It's going to be a year. I won't say a year of judgment for HBCU athletics, but a lot of people are going to say it's the year after prime. And is it going to carry forward? Is it going to go back? So to me, this fall is going to be big.
Yeah, this is essentially going to be known as the post-prime era in HBCU. But and a lot of stuff you just talked about, like we talked about this before he got the job, and he touched on it. Like he touched on a lot of these things. He said some similar things that you just echoed. Well, basically, I want to get you out of the parking lot to get you into the stands. He said similar words, and I thought about it once he said it, because you and I had already talked about it. And I think what people have to do and have to realize is, okay, there was a lot of stuff that he said and that he did that you can take away. And you can take away and you say, okay, I'll pick this up and carry this torch a little bit further, and then someone else can pick it up and carry it a little bit further and a little bit further to where you can get to a certain level of expectations and a certain level of play. But what I'm afraid that may happen was many people will just say, oh, that's just Deion, and I can't do what Deion did, and just stop trying. But you can't stop trying. You have to start doing. You can say, oh, shoot, I can't do it the way Prime did it, but I can do it.
And that's what you have to do. You got to try. You got to find a different way to try. Like I said, there's only one Deion Sanders. So to think you're going to be able to match and do things exactly the way he did it, but from what he did, can you extract to do differently? What can you do to extract? Like I said, all coaches ought to be on social media. Now, some like it, some don't, some run from it, you know, whatever. But that's something that he did every week. And it wasn't all football. It wasn't on campus. I remember when he first went down there, he introduced us to the staff. These people who work the locker rooms and the equipment and whatnot. Let me introduce you to him. You know, he went to some people's house on Sunday after church, and they already held hands and said a prayer and had dinner. Things like that, man. I mean, some people got to think outside of the box, you know, at these universities, and find ways for people to get to know the coaches, because that's the other thing. People knew Deion Sanders. People knew he personally didn't need the money. So they said, well, I need money for this. They wrote a check. They know it was going to go for that, you know, because they knew him. People got to get to know your coaches. People got to get to know your places. And whether you have a coach's show that's on TV or not, you have what it takes to put your coach's image out there every day so that people can know them, so people can see it. It's just a matter of doing it. You know what I mean? And so
I think that's for most institutions. You have to start developing, whether it's in the media department or whatever it is. You have to have a social media, even if you're just using students. You know, if you're just using students to get college credit, and you know it's going down for a grade. Because one of the biggest shows, like if you go to Netflix, they'll pop up is like Last Chance U, and they show some of these junior colleges football and basketball, And as soon as it drops, you can see Twitter blowing up with hashtag last chance you, and people are talking about, I don't like this coach, or I don't like this player, I love this coach. And you can go through it, and it's something to be said, because these guys don't get any recognition. You know, you talk about some of the recognition that the HBCU coaches don't get, but these guys in junior college, junior college level, really don't get the resources that are allotted for in a Power Five school. So they're doing it with duct tape and glue.
Yep.
And now they're learning that, just like you were just discussing, that you have to do it socially. You can't keep anything internally. You can keep some things internally. You just gonna have to use that edit button, you know, on the laptop. But you're gonna have to put everything you can out there to let people know what's going on with your program, to let people know what's going on with your kids and your students, especially in the days of NIL. Because if you could just talk about, like, as an HBCU student, how they could capitalize off these NIL deals.
Very much, very much. And we saw that happen. That was something else that made Jackson State attractive. You know, Coach Prime realized the value in that and lined up some businesses. You know, but some may have been Fortune 500 companies, but most of the NIL deals are not coming from Fortune 500 companies. It's something local. It's something that young people can show up at. I mean, my goodness, look at all the guys over at Georgia. They come back. Stetson Bennett said, what, Raisin Cane's, right, chicken fingers, right? So everybody showed up, right? So, I mean, that's the type of thing you think of, you know, some place that young people or people of the community are going to patronize. And hey, I would you like to have one of our players or several of our players, you know, come by and be a part of that. But somebody has to hook that up. Somebody has to be there and realize the importance of that and the value of that. No, it's not going to be worth millions of dollars or whatnot, but anybody who's on athletic scholarship appreciate some extra cash.
That part.
You know what I mean? And there was an NIL summit that I had a chance to go to last fall here in town. They had it at the College Football Hall of Fame. And there were a number of HBCUs that were there. Florida A&M had a group of people there. Jackson State had some folks there. Tuskegee had some folks there. And I was glad to see that the schools knew the importance of it, that they sent them there too, and they dressed their part. You know, and there are a lot of companies and corporations looking for young people to be a part of it. Those are the type of things you got to get plugged into. Make sure when they have those NIL summits or things of that nature, that people from your programs are there just to get the information about what it takes and to form those relationships. Don't miss the opportunity for it, because people are looking for HBCUs right now. They really are. It's just a matter of showing up in those places. It's all that has been said, all that has been seen, you know, in the last 2.5 to 3 years. And they know that it can be a good product. And they know they will get their investment back. And like I said, when it comes to a place like Jackson State, they want to be aligned with the winner. So who's not going to throw Phil Mickelson? I forgot which money Phil Mickelson threw down at Jackson State. Phil Mickelson wrote check Jackson State. What the heck was that? Winning.
Right.
Winning. You know? So that to me, that's the challenge is to find your way to do it and plug into it. And, you know, like I said, we're not going to reverse this 1970 playbook in 50 years. That's what I call it, the 1970 playbook, which what a lot of people don't realize, Kamish, when we don't go into games, we sit in the parking lot, we're feeding into that 1970 playbook. The 1970 playbook was to weaken the product at HBCUs to the point that Black folk would even go see it. And don't you know, when it got to the 90s, after they got the best talent, now we'll play you. Well, now you're losing by 50 points. That runs people out of your stands. That runs your recruits away, you know. And so it's the 1970 playbook. What will the 2023 playbook for HBCUs be to recoup some of that?
Right.
It's a deep story. It's a long story, but a lot of people who sit in the parking lot don't know. As they sit in the parking lot with the game going on, they're actually feeding into the 1970 playbook to make our product so weak that we wouldn't go see it ourselves. We're going to sit out in the parking lot all day. And that's a very 90s thing. I was living in North Carolina when I saw guys would sit out in the parking lot with a grill and a boom box. Y'all not going in the game. Oh, no, we'll be here when you come out. They had seen their team go and play and lose to those teams. And so they didn't feel like they were missing anything. but not going in because that caliber player wasn't there anymore. And folks don't realize that when they sit out, that that is what it is. You know, it's been that long ago.
Yeah,
you know, it's been that long ago.
A lot of times, especially in the community, you follow the herd. You know, you don't realize what's going on, so you just follow the herd, and everybody say, "Oh, well, we're gonna stay outside because such and such, such and such." Oh, because I always thought it was crazy that yes, the HBCU bands are amazing. I love it, but I always thought it was very odd growing up when you said, "Well, the show was the halftime show." Well, what about, you know, you got the first half and the second half.
Yeah.
What about the first half, the second half? I'm sure there has to be some talent there. Like, I'm sure it's going on. Well, the halftime show, we go for the band. And you hear that. And so it starts to be ingrained, you know.
That's what you do. That's what you do. And the next generation sees that, okay, we're going, which game we're going to? You know, we're going to Tech or Georgia? No, we're going, okay, well, we ain't got to be there till the second quarter. You know, I mean, that's what it becomes. And like I said, that's been 50 years in the making to get where we're at right now. And it's not going to just turn around because one school gets two or three five-star guys. You know, it's going to take a minute, but we got to be consistent. We got to work toward it and look for steady growth, have good management of the athletic programs, have good leadership, you know, at the school presidents, and get folk on the same page and the conference commissioners. Which I think McClellan has basically done an outstanding job with the SWAC. So that's to me those are the things that you have to pull together and be consistent. Like I said, this didn't happen overnight, and it's not going to change overnight either. But you want to see progress, and then put them schools on your schedule, man. Put those playoff teams on your schedule. You know, call Youngstown State up, tell them you want to play them. You know, call those schools up and put them on Sam Houston, Sam or Stephen F. Austin. You know, put them on your schedule and play them. And when you start beating them, folks, then you know you're ready.
Right.
You know, that's what I recommend everybody do. Put them on your schedule. I mean, we just had a team in Benedict have that fantastic season last year. They get to the second round. They got a bye from the first round. They get a second round, and Winkett came in and ran them off their own field. My thing is probably who did they play during the regular season?
Mm-hmm.
Did they play a Wingate? Did they play a Catawba? Did they play a Valdosta State? Did they play a Mississippi College or North Florida or West Florida, you know, during the regular season? Put one of them teams on your schedule. So once you get to the playoffs, it ain't new. You know?
Right. And with that, if I'm not mistaken, is Benedict's quarterback, did he hit the transfer portal?
I'm not sure. I've seen some people that did. I don't know. He may have, you know. But, I mean, they did a magnificent job, had a tremendous season, as did Virginia Union as well. And then those are the D2s, and people don't talk about them as much. But you talk about the other two programs that were exemplary last season, you have to talk about Virginia Union and Benedict. But Benedict, you know, like I said, they got a home game, and that's rare for an HBCU in the playoffs. That's the other thing. You go to the playoffs, your chances of getting a home game, unless you are ranked where Jackson State was ranked. If you're ranked below like 12 or 13, you're hitting the road. You will not play. And your fans are not going to go out to Montana.
Exactly.
They ain't going out there. Your band ain't going out to Montana. It's going to be just a football game, and it's going to be cold. You know, so, I mean, that's the thing about it. A lot of people do not understand, you know. You'd rather come into Atlanta. You'd rather be a part of something like the Celebration Bowl. You'd rather have your program on display on national TV at 12 noon before any of the other bowl games start that day.
Right.
So that's the thing that's special. And I want to see us, you know, protect that game. And hopefully in the coming year, we'll take the whole top level and sell all them seats up there too, because I think it's certainly possible. It's certainly possible to do it.
Yeah. Well, last question that made me think about it when I was talking about the young man entering the transfer portal from Benedict. Do you believe that a lot of athletes may start to do some of the things similar, like to go to a Benedict, go to a NC Central, go to a Grambling, and then go out there, ball out, so to speak, and then try to upgrade or try to leave and go to a bigger institution.
That's what I'm rationalizing, because the transfer portal thing is not going to go away. That this is going to happen, and you see players using it. When you see a player who started 2 years, an old lineman who started for two seasons for Nick Saban, getting in the transfer portal to see what his value is somewhere else, man, that in the past that would never happen. You started for 2 years at Saban and you're leaving.
Right.
You know, that wouldn't happen. Transfer portal and NIL is making that type thing happen. So, I mean, I was disappointed, like I said, about Travis Hunter not being able to stay at Jackson State for his 3 years before he went to the National Football League. But could that be the formula of recruitment, as you said, going forward to get that top player? Hey, let us help you. Come spend your first year playing at an HBCU. You know, come in and enjoy this experience. Enjoy a different experience, help us raise our level, you ball out and increase your value for NIL for that major school. You know, I don't think that's a bad idea. You'd rather have him on campus for a time than not at all.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it also raises your profile on signing day. If you can have that player say, look, you know what? Yeah, I'm starting out. I'm going to make this commitment. Lay them caps out there and pick up that cap for Grambling. Pick up that cap for Tennessee State. Pick up that, you know what I mean? Maybe you change the way you recruit, which transfer portal changed the way we're recruiting anyway. But maybe you see if that player, that five-star, top five recruit in the country will say, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to go play my first year at Southern. You know, I'm going to go play my first year, you know, at South Carolina State and ball out, make it to the Celebration Bowl, and then, you know, go, you know. So, yeah, I think that's a possible strategy as we look at how things are recruiting with college athletics are changing.
Yeah, and with that, like, I won't hold you any longer, but I'll put a pin in that just because I want us to go – And when we come back on another date, talk about the recruiting, because you are also very active in high school football. And I want to kind of talk about that dynamic a little later about how the transfer portal is also impacting high school seniors, you know, and how they, because I had like my son plays baseball at Westlake High School, and I was talking with the coach. He's saying he's telling a lot of his guys, man, he said, I'm putting a lot of kids in school and we're going to these different places. But I'm telling them, if you get an offer, you can't sit on it anymore. You can't wait for the school that you want to come in or the school that you really want. Like, when you get an offer, you better jump on it 9 times out of 10, because a lot of these coaches, they're looking to that transfer portal first and finding a young man who's already been away from home. Finding someone who's used to being out on his own and independent, as opposed to you just leaving from mama's house, you know?
Yeah.
So, I want to, like I said, we can talk about that one another time, because I don't want to hold you up any further.
And especially want to talk about baseball, man. I'm loving what's happening with baseball here in our area. My goodness, Greg and I are making another point. There's a wave of young black talent.
Yes.
That's coming from this area. And we're so excited about. We had Tamar Johnson on King Holiday. He came on with us out of Mays High School, the number 4 pick last year overall. We spent some time with Chandler Simpson, a young man out of Georgia Tech, who grew up in the area, was drafted in the second round. And so we just want people to get to hear some of these people and follow them as they go up this wave that's going to change baseball. And I think it's fitting that it comes from where we live. It should come from where we live.
Right.
I can't think of a better tribute to Hank Aaron, really, than to see this genesis of outstanding young baseball talent come from his town and being touched by guys like Marquise Grissom and Marvin Freeman, HBCU products, by the way. who are very much involved with this. So yeah, man, we come on back. We'll chat about that because I love it. I simply love it.
And I've always said, I think, you know, Day Day, Damian Lewis, you know, we have the conversation a lot because we talk about, like, I've seen it from since my son was 5, 6 years old. We go out and we would play baseball, and South Fulton, like around Henry County, Clayton County, it's been a huge. I know, you know, they'll tell you all about East Cobb and all about everything out there.
It's
been a huge movement. I've seen it all the way through from, like I said, for the past 10, 15 years.
Don't leave out Redan.
Right. All the way around that you can just see that these young black boys are getting back into baseball. And I think that's something to say about parents. I think there's something to say about, you know, some of these coaches that are helping these young men get into that. But yes, definitely. Thank you again for coming out and joining me. Like I said, I have to make myself stop because, like I said, I can sit and talk to you all day, but I know that you have things going on. Again, let everyone know where they can find you, where they can watch you. You're on television, you're on the radio, you're on social media. Let everyone know where they can check you out.
Man, I'm just thankful and blessed that the phone still ring, man. on Sports Radio 929 The Game with Greg Clarkson. You got to come back and visit with us, man. We got to get you on with us since we're on Saturday and Sunday mornings. Now, I hope you join us there. I'm on CW69 three nights a week. We started Atlanta Now News. We had a chance to be a part of the sports segment for that, which has been something that I've enjoyed doing. Of course, you can find me on social media at Sam Crenshaw 23. You know, S. Crenshaw on Instagram and also Samuel Crenshaw on Facebook. So I'll be looking for you. Drop me a line, holler at me.
Yes, indeed. Again, this has been the Commissioner's Conversation. I'm your host, Commissioner Gordon. You can check me out on Instagram at the.commissioner.gordon, also on Twitter at G Robinson Sports, and on Facebook at Commissioner Gordon Robinson. Tune in, check us out every week. Have a good time. We love to have a great debate. We talk back and forth, but we always keep it respectful. So, yes, indeed, keep it. Once again, until next week, I'll holler.
Commissioner Gordon.